As we left off in the previous year, we're just beginning to define the principle called Hezek She'eino Nikar. So we learned two things about Hezek She'eino Nikar. Number one, that there was a major machlokes in Masechet Gittin that appears as reference in our Sugya of Heim B'Kama about whether Hezek She'eino Nikar, unrecognizable form of damage, whether that is Chayav Min HaTorah or not. The reason why there's such a machlokes is because the Mishnah tells us in Gittin that if you damage somebody in an unrecognizable way, you metame his fruit, or you traped up his wine. So the Mishnah says that if you did it intentionally, you have to pay. If you did it unintentionally, then you don't have to pay. So Chizkiah said that the reason for that distinction is because Min HaTorah, you really should have to pay all the time. Hezek She'eino is called Hezek. The only thing is that if you did it unintentionally, we're trying to encourage you to come forward and to tell the person that his food is not treif. So therefore, Chazal exempted you. And Rabbi Yochanan said the exact opposite. Rabbi Yochanan says that Min HaTorah, you never have to pay, because it's not considered to be damage altogether. It's just that with the Rabbanon, we make you pay if you did it intentionally as a kenas, as a penalty. So that's how we pass it. So from here on, we're going to be assuming like Rabbi Yochanan that midaraisa hezek she'eino nikar is really meaningless. It does not constitute an act of mazik, but mid the Rabbanon is a problem. And again, it's only going to be forced to pay in a situation of mazik. Then we had a further machlokes. Rashi tells us how exactly do you define hezek she'eino nikar. So Rashi said in our sugya that you take a look at the fruit and you don't see anything. Doesn't look like it's room to me. Looks like it's perfectly acceptable, even though we all know that it's tamei. Doesn't matter, since it's not nikola ayin to the outsider that there's anything wrong with the fruit. That's considered to be hezek she'eino nikar. And Tosfos disagreed. Tosfos said that it's a question of the shasa hezek at the time that the supposed damage is taking place. Is it clear that a damage is taking place? That's what Rabbi Chorvasim pointed out, that if you metame somebody's apple, nobody can really tell whether it was Hukshel Kabbaltumah, but if you metame somebody's bottle of milk or something, so then you don't have to, doesn't have to have Hukshel Kabbaltumah. It's already considered to be Mashke. Mashke, by definition, is Tame. So according to Tosfos, it would be Chayev under those circumstances, because it's Nikar B'Shasa Hezek, even though it's not Nikar within the Cheftz of the Paris itself. So that Machlokes Rashi Tosfos now sets the stage for the next part of our Sugya. We just barely began it on Friday. Let's pick it up from Bavakamid of Kufam and Aleph again, the third of the Mamakamas. So the Gemara quoted a braisa that said, "Mechitzas akerem shenifritza, omalo gedor, nifritza omalo gedor." If I have a vineyard, and it's right next to your grain, next to your wheat, next to your barley, and there's a fence between us, rightfully so, because if there's no fence, then everything is treif because of kilei akerem. But now the problem is the fence fell down, there's a breach in the wall. So the beis din will say to the owner of the grapes, we're here reviewing as the owner of the grapes as the mazik. His grapes are, in a sense, going out and they're damaging, quote unquote, damaging the other person's grain. So we say to the mazik, we say to the owner of the kerem, Gedor, you better fix up. You better fix up your fence. Nifritza omalo gedor. And if it breaks again, we'll tell him again to fix up the fence. We keep on warning him to fix up the fence. Nisyaish remedav lo gadra. And now he doesn't listen to us. He gives up. He's tired of fixing the fence every time. He doesn't bother doing it anymore. And now the grapes continue to grow. And now they continue to impact on the grain. So now the halacha says, Hareze kidesh. So now we say that everything just became kadosh. Now, kadosh here does not mean in a good sense. It means it's pentikta shavalei hazer shetizra. That means now everything became disqualified. Everything became osar v'hanom min haTorah. And the part that interests us now is v'chai b'achayus. So, and the mazik over here being the balakerem who did not listen to us ultimately and fix his fence properly, he is going to be responsible. He is going to have to pay for the damages that were incurred by the bal hatvua. So the Braisa says explicitly that one is going to be chayef to pay for this kind of mazik. And the question is, what kind of a mazik is this? Is this a hezek hanikar? Is this a hezek she'eino nikar? Is this something that's recognizable? Is this something that's not recognizable? So lechora, this should depend on the machlokes Rashi and Tosfos. Where do you draw the line? What's considered to be hezek nikar? What's considered to be hezek she'eino nikar? So according to Rashi, you have to look at the cheftz at the end. Bring in a non-Jew to look at the cheftz, assess the value of this cheftz, and say, is this really, is it ruined? Is it broken? So you're going to show this, guy's going to come, the owner of the wheat and the barley, the owner of the grain, is going to come running into Beis with his wheat and say, look at this terrible thing. Now I have this tray for wheat, I can't do anything with it. So the Beis is going to bring in their experts, bring in their farmers, and they're going to take a look at this grain. They're like, what's the guy's problem? What's wrong with the grain? It looks good to me. What do you mean it's wrong with the grain? It grew together with Kiriat Karim. So you know what the Goyish father is going to say? So what? He's going to say, what does it do with anything? Oh, so what? It's perfectly okay. It's perfectly acceptable grain. So it's what Rashi coined the phrase in our sugya, Ein hezek nikar b'secha peiros. So therefore, it would by default have to be hezek she'eino nikar. Now, just because it says hezek she'eino nikar, we could still understand the price. We could still understand why I have to pay. Because midrabanan, you are obligated to pay for hezek she'eino nikar. So one would have to learn, according to Rashi, that this is the knas of hezek she'eino nikar. This brisa is an extension of the Mishnah, the extension of our sugya. There's another illustration of Tamim and the Mem of Manasseh. There's another practical example of hezek she'eino nikar. But hezek she'eino nikar it is. You can't turn it into nikar, according to Rashi, because it's missing that most critical thing. It's not nikar b'secha peiros. However, what about according to Tosfos? What about according to Tosfos' view that it doesn't really interest us whether something is nikar b'secha peiros? What interests us is we have to take a snapshot of the Shasa Hezek and ask ourselves, we don't have to bring in the Goyisha farmers, we have to ask ourselves, we, as Tamidei Chachamim, looking and watching and seeing what's playing out in front of our very eyes, do we see a damage taking place or not? That's the only question you have to ask according to Tosfos. That's why Tosfos held that if I watch somebody take a mouse and put it into a cup of milk, I'm watching a damage. I don't need nikar b'secha peiros. I just have to know that there's a loss of value that's taking place. It doesn't matter whether it's for physical reasons or halachic reasons. According to Tosfos, I'm looking at grapes. I'm looking at wheat. I'm looking at a wall that has a hole in it. So anybody learned the ABCs of Kalayim will realize that. Hey, wait a minute. Don't worry, I didn't learn the ABCs of Kalayim. Kalayim is one of the hardest masechet in Shas. Don't feel bad. So everyone's watching and looking at Kilayim, watching the Issa taking place. So then the Mazik, the Bala Gefer, the Bala Anov, the owner of the grapes, will be the Mazik. And he's being Mazik, not Derech Hezek She'eino Nikar. It's Hezek HaNikar Mamish. It's Nikolei Naim Mamish. It doesn't have to be a physical damage. It can even be a lying damage, as long as it's Nikar B'Shas Ma'isa. So L'chora, how to reap shad this braisa? Whether this braisa is relating to us a dinmid the rabbanon of hezek shen nikar as a kenas, or whether this braisa is relating to us a potential hezek di araisa, probably will depend upon what your definition of hezek nikar and hezek shen nikar are all about. So, do we have any raias from the braisa itself? Whether this braisa is dealing with the sugi of hezek shen nikar? So, the chora, the litmus test should be: well, is this mazed as a shogeg? If the braisa happens to be talking about a case of shogeg, that would be a proof positive that it's hezek mamish. That's hezek hanikar mamish. Because hezek shenanikar only is chayv if it's for mezid. So can you tell? Is this mezid? Is the shogeg? The problem is, it's a little bit unclear what this is. What makes this unclear is as follows. On the one hand, it's not an absolute super-duper shogeg in the sense that the guy had no idea what was coming. The Baal HaKerem has been warned by Beis Din, and perhaps has been warned more than once by Beis Din, so it's hard to call him an outright shogeg. On the other hand, it's not the imagery of a mazer that we're used to. We usually think of mazer means it's a really mean guy. I'm coming with this mouse, and I'm going to drop this mouse into your barrel of wine. I'm going to rush a lahachas, I'm going to really cause you tzaras. Here you're talking about a nice guy. He's a nice guy, but he's probably not a mean guy, probably more of a lazy guy. I mean, the Beis Din said, okay, we'll give you 3 days to get that wall fixed. He's got to first go to Home Depot, he's got to go find something. He doesn't really know how to do it. He's a sheepish guy trying to bang it a couple of days. He's not sure what he's doing. He calls his friend's out of town. He said, I'll wait till Ben Hazmano to fix. That's what the Bryce is describing. So now you go tell me, what is that? Is that a shogeg? Is that amazing? And sometimes as parents and as Rebbeim, we sometimes have to, it's a very, very, gray line, what's called shogeg, what's called mezid. So since we're not sure what shogeg mezid, we shouldn't feel bad. The Rishonim also weren't sure what shogeg mezid is. So depending on what you define, this middle, almost aspects of shogeg, aspects of mezid case, will depend upon whether you think this is hezek nikar or hezek shena nikar. So that's exactly what Tosfos says. So Tosfos, in the fourth of Mamakom, Tosfos in Mamakom Kuf of Mebeis, so Tosfos writes, Chai b'achri Yusso. So even though the truth is that Hezek Sheiranikar is not considered to be Hezek, Nir Lari, the Ri's opinion is the Ha Choshev Hezek Nikar. So Tosu says Lashita. So this is called Hezek HaNikar. Don't hide behind Hezek Sheiranikar. Don't hide behind a Knas the Rabbanon. This is called a real bona fide Hezek HaNikar. Why? Shere Nikar Shukilayim Kishero HaGafanim Besada. He says, I'm looking at the Gefanim, I'm looking at the field, what other conclusion can I draw? This is Hezek HaNikar, this is a Mazik Deraisa. Aval, now Tosus tells us, you want to know what Hezek Sheiranikar is? Hezek Sheiranikar is as follows, Tami Taras Chaveiro, Ava Bisharon Asheras al Taras, even though I also could argue, well, I see the mouse on the Taros, Lo Choshev Hezek Nikar, that is still not called Hezek Nikar. The Miyadeh, those are the keywords, the Miyadeh of Hokshiro, who knows whether they were Hokshiro or not. Again, that's Shita Tosa that we spoke about on Friday. So Tosa says, L'shita Seinu, that we who define Hezek Sheiranikar in the sense that it's not Nikar B'Shas Maisa, this could fall under the category of Hezek HaNikar. And in fact, it does, says the Ri. And now Tosa takes almost an attack against Rashi. Tosa says, about Ein Loimar, don't say, it's like saying, like Azeda said, like Alta Zeda said, like Rashi said, don't say, Avalein, they didn't call Rashi by name, but they, you know who they're referring to. Avalein Lomit, don't say, Hachanami, have a Hezek Shein Nikar. Don't call this Sugya Bechit Sakarem Hezek Shein Nikar. Vikansu, and just hide behind the Knas and say, oh yeah, this is the Dinder Abana, this is the Mishnah Kittenim and Gimel, this is the Dinder Abana of Knas of Hezek Shein Nikar. Come up in Mitame. Like we have a precedent by Mitame. Shloye Kolecha and Holek Mitame to Rosh Chaveiro. Tosa says, no, it's not true. Tosa says, the Hocha Leika Lemechash, Kevin Shabal Karanami Mavsid. So Tosa throws in from left field and he's going to prove to you now why the other Pshat is not correct. Nobody can argue, says Tosa, which Rashi does argue, but nobody can argue and tell you that this is Hezek Sheiranikar and that the only reason we have to pay is a Knas. I'll tell you why, very simple. A Knas makes sense when the person who will be in Kodes otherwise would have nothing to lose. It means if I go ahead and I take a mouse, I drop it into your cup of milk, so we better make a knas against that, because otherwise it'll be a free-for-all. Anytime I get angry at you, I'll be a little above a comma, a little gifted, as I shtickle Torah. Instead of taking a baseball bat and smashing your window, I'll bring a mouse and drop it onto your truma. So we have to stop that. But over here, we have this tremendous incentive to stop the Baal HaKerem from ruining the other person's tefua. We don't have to. We don't have any incentive. We have no need to do that. He would never do it in the first place. You know why? Because he's going to lose also. Everything becomes awesome. No. So we don't have to make a rule. We don't have to enforce a rule. We don't have to start penalizing Baal HaKerems to make sure they fix up their fences. They have every incentive to do it for their own sake, because otherwise they're going to end up having to throw out all their grapes also. So therefore, Tosa says, to make a knas in a case that's unnecessary, because I probably didn't do that. So therefore, don't hide behind knas. And now Tosa gets to the punchline, the ode. Tosa says, iknasu, and if you're going to tell me that's a knas, then he should have only been chayev if it would have been b'mezid. And this Tosa says is shogeg. Why? Because Tosa says the person who's being lazy and kvetching and he can't figure out how to fix up the fence, it's not a mezid. He's lazy. It's not called a mezid. It's called a shogeg. And since it's called a shogeg, you cannot apply the rule of Hezek Sheiranikar. So you have to fall back and call it a Mazik B'Yadayim. You have to call it a Hezek HaNikar Mamish. And therefore it would be Chayav, presumably, on a level of Deraisa. This is Tosa's presentation. How would Rashi respond to all these arguments of Tosa? Very simple. Rashi would say, the guy's amazing. I go to him Gedor once, twice, three times. I told him Gedor a few times. So he's considered amazing. And Tosa's asked against Rashi's supposed pshat, why make the Kenas? He has every incentive not to do it for his own loss. We have a rule in halacha, the lo plug. Lo plug means we make the kenas across the board. It happens to be that once in a blue moon, it's unlikely that we have to make the kenas. That doesn't matter. It doesn't interest us. The kenas was made universally. If you are a mazik, b'mezid, mamun chavercha, b'hezik sheiranikar, b'derabbanan, we throw a kenas at you. You can give a shtickle Torah. You don't have to make a kenas for me. I'm gonna do it myself. No. We don't make such details and distinctions in halacha. So in all the dust settles, we have two very, very different ways of reading this braisa, b'chitzei kem shenifritza. Whether it's a din whether it's a din of Hezek Nikra, Hezek Shira Nikra, ultimately depends upon everything we've been saying right now, until now. How do you define Hezek Shira Nikra? Rashi's version of Tosa's version. However, there is a whole other aspect of this sugya, Mechitza Kemshin Nifritza, that we have to evaluate. So we have to evaluate on two different levels. First, we have to evaluate it on its own merits. We have to learn, in a sense, a different sugya. But eventually, we have to take that different sugya and then relate it back to our sugya and see how two very, very different, very important, independently important sugyas in Mazik now begin to converge together. So we go down to the next Rambam Kamus, the Bavakamad of Kufam and Aleph. The Gemara tells the following story. Reish Lakish, Achvele Dinra L'Rabbi Elazar. So Reish Lakish was once asked by Rabbi Elazar, by a colleague of his, to take a look at a dinar, to take a look at a coin, to see what his thoughts were about a particular coin. When in the olden days, so you had a coin. How do you know the coin is good? Is it still up to par? Is it been part of it melted down? Part of it, maybe it's counterfeit. Maybe who knows what? So you would bring your coin to an expert. So before I'm about to sell my house for $1 million worth of coins, so I want to make sure the coins are up to par. So you would bring your coin to the expert to make sure that what you're really getting is worth it. So Reish Lakish achle dinar l'Rabbi Elazar. So Reish Lakish brought his coin to Rabbi Elazar. Apparently, Rabbi Elazar knew how to evaluate the coins properly. So Rabbi Elazar gave him the okay that in fact it was up to par. So Reish Lakish said to him, Chazi di Allah kasamichna. So Reish Lakish said to him, I'm telling you, Rabbi Elazar, my colleague, my fellow Talmid Chachman, fellow businessman, he said, I'm just telling you, I'm relying on you. You know, this is serious stuff. I'm about to get some money for something I'm selling. I want to make sure the coin's good, so I'm really relying on you. Amalei, so Rabbi Elazar said, Ki samchas alai my lememra. He said, Rabbi Elazar said back to him, what do you mean by that? What are you making such a fuss at? You're saying that you're relying on me. Do you mean to say, are you insinuating that if it turns out the coin is bisha, is bad, I'm going to have to reimburse you? I'm going to have to give you back a good coin? Is that what you mean to say? So Rabbi Elazar is saying, Reish Lakish is saying back to Rabbi Elazar that, I'm sorry, I got the wrong people. One person showing the coin, one person's looking at the coin. So he said back to him, that, wait a second. Said that if you mean to insinuate that I'm going to be chayef to pay if I mess up, that's not true. Va'atu di amros, Rabbi Meir who didoy dina de garmi. My love, Rabbi Meir lo svilan kavasei, and le lo Rabbi Meir svilan kavasei. So now Rabbi Loz and Reish Lakish are now making reference to a major machlokes Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim, which is ultimately going to impact whether if I look at a coin and I give you bad advice, I give you a wrong assessment, am I going to be held responsible in Beis Din? The Gemara begins to reference the machlokes Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim. So we have to backtrack for a minute, understand the machlokes Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim, understand what this has to do with looking at coins, and then ultimately understand what it does have to do with mechitzah kemshin nifritza, different side, how this interplays with everything we've been talking about. So there was a major, major machlekes Rabbi Meir Chacham that comes up in a few sugyas in Shas called Dina de Garmi. Garmi is a very, very tricky phrase. It has something to do with goreim. It has something to do with causing damage, albeit not in a direct form. A mazik biyadayim means I take a baseball bat and I smash your window. That's a mazik biyadayim. That's a pasuk in Chumash. Maka nefesh behemi yishomena. If I kill your animal, it doesn't matter if I kill your animal, but I break your window. If I'm mazik, you'll be a dime in an active manner. So for sure, I'm chayav to pay b'doros mazik. That's the din d'oraisa, nothing to discuss. But sometimes I can damage you in such a way that in the end of the day, you did suffer a loss of money, but it's a little bit indirect. What would that mean? This is touching a little bit like some of the things we spoke about in the Shabbos yesterday about grama. What would that mean, indirect? So one of the classic examples of dina d'garmi is a Gemara that appears also in the Mavakamad of Tzadi Test, of Kuf. You have an IOU note that says that Plony owes you $1 million. So I go ahead and don't do too much. I go ahead and I burn that note. So what is that called? So how much was I mazik you? So one could argue, I'm sure I mazik you. I was just mazik you $1 million. Now you're going to come to Beis and ask for, can you please give me $1 million? And the other person is going to say, where's the IOU? It's not here anymore. That's not going to get you very far in Beis Din. So I was mafsid you $1 million. But the truth is, I didn't take a bat and break your window that was worth $1 million. I burnt the piece of paper. Now that you don't have the piece of paper, you're not going to be able to come to Beis to collect your debt. So at the end of the day, I set up a whole thing in motion that's going to cause you a loss of $1 million. So that's what's called Dida de Garmi. It's a Gorim, it's a very indirect. So what's the Din? So Rabbi Meir's opinion is that we're doing Dida de Garmi. That even though it's indirect, it doesn't matter, you still have to pay a full $1 million, whatever the Hefsed Mammon was, even though it was brought about through a whole series of chain of events. And the Chachamim say, no. The Chachamim say, you're potter in the case of Dida de Garmi. How much do you have to pay? You have to pay exactly what the value of a piece of paper is, which is about 3 cents. That's exactly what you have to pay. That's it, no more. That's the opinion of those who say, ain't doing Dida de Garmi. So the Gemara now relates this machlokes where a man the chum that started out in the case of burning shtaros and now begins to apply to a belazer reshloch shluch in your coins. So I take a look at your coin and I give you a really, really bad piece of advice and I say, this coin, oh, I take out my, perfect, beautiful, wonderful, this is a $10,000 coin piece, it's really worth its weight in gold. What happens? You go ahead and you do business, and you accept that coin, and you give up your $10,000 item, and you accept that coin. And then, lo and behold, it turns out that I gave you bad advice. It turns out I know what I was talking about. It's mamash a piece of junk. So now you come to Beis Din, take me to the Dintar and say, you better give me back $10,000. I say, for what? Because you caused me a hefset of $10,000. I caused you a hefset of $10,000. I didn't take a baseball bat and smash a window. I gave you bad advice, which set up a whole chain of events, Maisa down the line. You sold the field, then you got this coin, and now you ended up, you can't use the coin, the whole story, oh, God, yeah. Good, that's called Dida de Garmi. According to our mayor, I, who gave you the original bad advice, Achayev, Altamazik, Dida de Garmi, and according to the Rabbanan,
Potter. The case with the lottery ticket and the case with the coin, if the coin was a rare coin, mm-hmm. worth $10,000, and he stole, it was a nickel, and it was a rare coin. There was only one left in the world, and that coin is worth $10,000. And someone steals the coin. Does he pay him the nickel, or does he pay him the $10,000?
If that item is marketable as $10,000, it's a shove a cast of $10,000.
So the case of the lottery ticket, if someone were to go on eBay and sell the lottery ticket, they would get $1 million. So why wouldn't he be mechayev of $1 million? Because the lottery ticket on the market is worth whatever he can collect on it.
Excellent.
So right. It's like a dollar bill. Dollar bill is not
right. Right. Excellent question. Okay. So we're gonna have to hold off when we talk a little bit more about nicker and not nicker and mice and chepzen. We have a lot of terms thrown around. Very excellent. Excellent ta'ara. So again, so getting back to the story. So we know there's a machlokes of Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim about the case of Sorev Shtar Shel Chavero, and we know that machlokes spills over to other kinds of cases of Garmi as well. And one of the cases being here, the issue of looking at somebody's coin and giving him the bad advice, and that's exactly what Rish Lakish or Velazim were pulling about, that whether or not he would really truly be held responsible or not. So it's unclear. Do we paskin like Rabbi Meir? Do we not paskin like Rabbi Meir? That's exactly what the Shachmat had. That was the give and take between Rabbi Elazar and Rish Lakish. But now we have to take that sugya of Dina de Gami and ask ourselves, how does that play out in terms of the case of the Mechitza Sekerem Shenifritza? So the Mechitza Kerem Shenifritza, I'm sitting on my field, you're sitting on your field, the fence falls down, and I'm lazy, and I listen to the Beis Din, and I end up not fixing the fence. And lo and behold, down the line, eventually the damage takes place. So the Gemara raises the question above a Kama Daf Kuf: could you really be chayav for that? Is that a mazik biyadayim or not? I didn't say anything about Hezek Shernikar. Is that a mazik biyadayim, or is that merely a grama? So the Gemara says, oh, really a garmi. The Gemara says it's not a mazik biyadayim. Says the worst we can call mechitza kerem shenifritza is dina de garmi. That's as bad as we can call it. Now, that's not so bad. According to Rabbi Meir, you would be chayav. According to Rabban, you would be potter. So the Gemara says, "Rabbi Kamad of Kuf, you're right. This brisa, mechitza kerem shenifritza, omul agudar, the Rambam raises kiddush chayav b'chayuso. This brisa is only true according to Rabbi Meir. If you follow, if you subscribe to Rabbi Meir Shita, then the brisa makes sense. And if you hold like the Rabbanon, then the din of the brisa is not correct, and you would not have to pay. So the Gemara tells us explicitly that this brisa, mechitza kerem shenifritza, is too indirect." Having a person having to pay because his fence fell down and he didn't bother fixing the fence, and then 6 months later the vines grow into the wheat, and now it turns out that the wheat is treif, that is so derech grum, that is so indirect. The worst you can call it is the garmi. If you're in the world of Rabbi Meir, you can say chayev. So Gemara says that explicitly. Mavakam Davkuf. This brisa is Rabbi Meir speaking. And the good news is, or the bad news for the Baal Gefa, good news for the Baal Tfuah, we pass like Rabbi Meir. Even though Rabbi Meir usually refers to Das Yochid, so here everyone else is disagreeing with him, but the later Amoraim said, and this one Rabbi Meir has accepted Lalocha, and we pass the Lalocha Lamaisa, Doin Dira Degavi. So this Bryce of Chitza Keresh and Ifritzah is now critical in terms of our understanding of the details of damage on two levels, because there are two potential Chidushim in the Sugi of Chitza Keresh and Ifritzah. Number one, it's a potential issue of Hezek Shein Nikar, depending on the Machlokes Rashi and Tosfos, whether that is Nikar or Eino Nikar. So one aspect of this sugya is Hezek Shein Nikar. And number two, forgetting about what you think about Nikar or Eino Nikar, it's still only an issue of Garmi. You're only Chayev B'din D'Garmi, you're only Chayev according to Rav Meir's view. So Mechitza Keresh and Ifritzah is a very, very complicated Din Torah. A person comes with his wheat that just became treif and comes to the basin and makes a claim against the Baal HaGefen and says, you have to pay me, you're another mamazik, pay me. So the basin has to spend a lot of time learning the sugya. You have to first ascertain, is this Hezek Nikar, is it Hezek She'en Nikar? You have to learn Rashi and Tosfos. And then you have to say, wait a second, even if it's Hezek Nikar, whatever you think it is, it's still only indirect, and therefore it's only Dina Degarmi, which once again would depend upon Machlokes Rabbi Meir and Chacham. So in the end, you're going to have to pay. In the end, the price says you're going to have to pay. But the mechanics, the details, the parameters of why you're paying are questionable on two different levels. So what I just said to you now is pretty much in the Gemara itself. But now where the Rishonim begin to take over and say, well, wait a second. What is the relationship between those two sugyas?
I don't see how it's just Dina Degarmi. I mean, like, it could also be, like, it's Maim Taltlin, just like... I mean, and in theory, it's like any other Shane Regal, it's my ox that just leaves my property and goes and gores your property.
So apparently the Gemara is learning that this is very, very indirect kind of a thing. This is not my ox really going anywhere. My participation in this hezek is by not fixing the wall. That's pretty much it. And you want to know, but isn't it worse than that? Isn't it, why don't we view the Geffen as my mammon that's actively going to be mazik?
Aish is Ruch Matsuya, whatever the case is, it doesn't matter.
I mean, it should be mammon mazik rather than an adam mazik derech garmi. It should be more of a mammon mazik. Unless you argue that this hezek is taking so long to happen, so, and I don't mean the word unrecognizable like hezek shenonika, but it's taking such a long time just to happen that this can't really be labeled as an other mamazik. It can't really be labeled as a mamon mamazik either. It's not an ox going out eating. It's a setting up of a system that eventually is going to, down the line, cause the damage. You're right. It's an interesting argument you're making. But the question that the Rishonim now begin to grapple with is the relationship or lack thereof between these two things. On the one hand, we learned one sugya of Hezek Shein Nikar, so we spent a lot of time talking about that. Now we spent a few moments talking about Dina Degarmi. And now the question is, what is the relationship, what is the connection between those two sugyas? Is almost every Hezek Shein Nikar, by definition, a Dina Degarmi? Because maybe one could argue that when I mazik you something in a non-Nikar Dikar manner, I didn't really do anything. I set up a system that's going to now lead that item is not worth any more money, but I didn't really do anything. Should we almost call every Hezek Shein Nikar almost like a subcategory of Dina Degarmi? So that's going to be a loaded question that the Ramban is going to deal with, hopefully Mitzvah tomorrow. We have to begin to understand that. So we learned the two sugyas separately and distinct from one another. Now the two sugyas begin to converge together, hopefully Mitzvah tomorrow will pick up that.